Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports In Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports In Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel. Sports In Depth is a show. And we're always open with Dear Lord by John Coltrane as we pay homage to our God and our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day and will that your way and will be our way. We thank you, Lord, for little things we so largely take for granted. And dear Lord, as mother said, find it like sin in our hearts, cast it in the sea of forgiveness that will never rise up against us on judgment day. Dear Lord, we thank you. The blessings, forthcoming blessings that have came all unmerited, so many unseen. Dear Lord, bless our families here and abroad. My family in Brazil, my loved ones here, down in Virginia, all the crew. At one point, Lord, we want to thank you for being our God, for you are God all by yourself. And we ask these blessings, all the blessings, in the name of your darling son, Jesus. Amen.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com, music for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports In Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Soul is the station. Sports In Depth is the show. It's another Sunday, and the posse is all coming in. Lady A will be on assignment. She'll be not joining us tonight. Maybe she can get in, but as of now, we're not looking for her to be riding along with us. And we'll be getting the rest of the crew joining us early. Nate B. Baseball out at the park. He'll be in about an hour, about 45 minutes or so, as he's down in the dugout getting the last inside dish on what's happening. Got a chance to see my good buddy, Dusty Baker. But before we go, as the great Sid Gatling, the producer of the John Sterling Show back in the day and my NYSA graduate, would say, before we move another further, let Mel Cosell-Smith introduce you to the Sports In Depth Nation.
Well, thank you, Doc. Welcome. The Sports In Depth Nation is here. The Sports In Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. We're here via the Blake Radio Network, and the straw that stirs the drink is here. And that's Doc Stanley. Take it away, Doc.
Thank you, Rooney, and, you know, appreciate that and the stutter. You know, and as we look back, you know, you said that I'm at the ballpark the other day and finally got it. Hadn't seen some of my contemporaries in a long time, Wally Matthews, Kevin Curran, and me and Wally were talking. Wally, you know, Wally at one time was the boxing president of the Boxing Writers of America, and I said the best pound for pound. You know, I saw Wally square for the guy, man. Something was said. Next thing I know, the guy made a little move, and there was Wally jabbing, hooking the body, doing the things that made him the champion. And as we talk about the Sterling Surgery, Greg, well, you know, in the month of this merry month of May, Reggie Jackson, on the 18th, celebrated another birthday. And, you know, the thing about Reggie, and when I was talking, you know, Reggie is a big Willie Mays fan, Idol Willie, and he liked, you know, one of Willie Mays' nicknames was Buck. And Reggie liked that nickname, and they used to call him that on the Oakland A's, and he just, you know, liked it so much because it was a nickname of the greatest player to ever play, Willie Mays. And we also at this time want to recognize that the 19th is the birthday of none other than Malcolm X. I've got to make a call to Master Richard St. Clair. I meant to get to him earlier. I'm going to have to do that during the course of this show and wish him happy birthday, the Iron Octopus Master who brought that to the forefront. Maybe I can even get a chance for him to join our show, get the panel rock and roll, and maybe I will try to get him to call in for a minute or two. And I've been running around all day. I got some calls from Brazil, And then I got a chance with one of the big boxing fans way back 1995. Where has the time gone? Like a river. Time just moves on and on. Time is never bigger. It just moves on and on and on. 1995. And I remember the day precisely because it was the same Saturday. Two things happened. Roy Jones Jr. was fighting in Atlantic City. Three things happened, as I found out later on. And Art Rush Jr., Sonny Height, one of the most heralded detectives in the history of New York City Police Department, and the head of security at Yankee Stadium. Well, I was at one of the games, and Sonny called me to the office. Hey, Mel, you know, we're never called me, Doc. We're putting together a Negro League. Maybe you can help us with this, you know, and maybe we can, you know, maybe we could Art Rush to emcee it. And I gave Big Daddy a call. He said he would do it. He gave him some nice jackets, too. And after the affair, I had to head down to AC because that night Roy Jones Jr. was fighting Vinnie Paziente. And that's ironic, as the link between Roy Jones Jr. and Art Rush Jr. now gets linked. I get down to AC, and there was a pre-fight affair. That was one of the reasons to get there early, too, because Roy's managers, Leroy, had done a painting for them of Roy. And I remember Lynn said, yay. Lynn said they got a good deal on it, too. In fact, and once again, what a segue into my Trust in God Sports in Depth Artifact Museum Hall of Fame. I have that reprint autographed, as I always try to do here in the Trust in God Sports in Depth Artifacts Hall of Fame Museum. I always try, if I can, to get Leroy to autograph the reprint as well as the athlete. The subject that he has in it, and I got Roy. If I got two of them, and it was the beginning of a friendship that started for me and Roy a little earlier, and I walked into the pre-party, the unveiling. Lynn and I told Mel, make sure you get down early. You know, Leroy wants to make sure you're there. In fact, I have a photo in the Trust in God Sports and Deaf Artifacts Museum of that event that day, and as I'm standing there, Lee says, hey, I know you. You're Doc Stanley from Boykin on Boxing. And it was Marie Ruggiero. A friendship was struck right there. And the 19th, as well as Malcolm X's birthday, is her husband, Joe Ruggiero. I say happy birthday to him. And the Ruggierios became family. You know, they invited me out to the barbecues. You know, they kind of thought it was a big deal having Doc Stanley at their barbecues. Great bunch of people. And his birthday, as we continue the birthdays of this month, as you know, earlier the 3rd, Sugar Ray Robinson, Walker Smith Jr. from Black Bottom, Detroit. He once said, I was black from Black Bottom, Detroit. I was black, and I was on the bottom. The 6th, greatest one to ever do it, Willie Howard Mays. The 11th, Mark Breland, greatest amateur fighter that ever lived, E-V-E-R, that ever lived. And Jerry Cooney's birthday, too, is also the same birthday as that of Willie Mays. And the next day, his own day, Mel Smith Sr., baby, the 7th, his birthday.
Hey, thank you, Doctor. Indeed
Mel,
it is.
Costell Smith. My nephew, RJ, is on the 8th. And as we move again, you know, Mark Breland and Minister Farrakhan celebrate the same birthday on the 11th. I got to call my buddy. You know, the time just moves. We're at the 20th already. Jim Beatty. John Beatty, I got a kid to hold him at the Cotton Club. His birthday is the 13th. Late friend, Walter, and Joe Lewis. And also, Smokey Robinson called Stevie Wonder. Stevie Wonderful. Julian Russ, the nephew of Art Russ, and we can get back to that. I'm glad I can't thought about it because Roy Jones Jr., Vinnie Paziente, Art Russ Jr. does the emceeing of the first and only Negro League of Fed Yankees, in which I'm proud and thank God I was part of. And Arthur told me, as Joe DiMaggio said, as Arthur here, and Art told me, we were talking that week after that fight, and remember that Art Rush Jr. saw them all. And Art Rush Jr. said something, quote, Art Rush Jr. told me that the Roy Jones Jr. on that June night, that's what Vinnie Pazienza, he said something I'll never forget. He said, that Roy Jones Jr. would have kicked Ray Robinson's ass. I'll never forget
that. Arthur George said that, Doc?
That's what he said. That Roy Jones Jr. would have kicked Ray Robinson's ass. And I was... And
you know something, Doc?
Hmm?
Pardon my interpretation. You know something, Doc? There's always one night, and I don't have to tell you. I mean, you're the one who told me and my mentor, but You know, Doc, there's always supposedly a day when a fighter, ball player, football player, is in the zone.
You know, Ronnie, you know, and this is why you're here. You know, and you always do this. You never fail to do this. Bases loaded, two outs. They just got out Alex Rodriguez. Willie Mays ain't playing today. And here you hit the big three-run home run that wins the game. But you never fail to do it because you're bringing up a point. You're bringing up a point that Arthur George told – never forget Arthur Russ. In Ray Robinson's book, Dusty just joins us. Ray Robinson's book, in Ray Robinson's autobiography, he said, you know, I've had many great nights. But the best night I ever was August 24th, 1949, when I knocked out a guy named Steve Aloys in the seventh round in Yankee Stadium. And Arthur George told me the best that Ollie ever was the night he fought Cleveland Big Cat Williams. Well, I read the validation by Sugar Ray in his book by my friend, the Pulitzer Prize winner, the great Dave Anderson. And I have a book here, and also in the Trust in God Sports and Death Artifact Entertainment Museum, autographed by Ollie, and it lists his fights. And his top three fights, number one, is what Arthur George said, Cleveland Big Cat Williams. And I asked Oscar De La Hoya, was there a night that you were just, as you say, Rooney, in the zone, couldn't be touched? He said, yeah. He said, when I fought Chavez. He said, man, my punches were there. Nothing he did I could feel. I could play. That was the night. He said it was, you know, the best night that he ever had. And maybe that night against Vinny Pazienza, I thought it might have been when he fought James Toney. And I once asked him, he said he didn't know. That's Arthur Judge. And there was another Panamanian guy, my late friend, Tito Del Rosario. And an old school gent who knew the fight center. He said he felt that Roy would beat Ray because Roy could hit as hard or harder than Ray, also with the speed that Ray had at the time. You know what I mean? And you know, and as Howard alluded to, and as Dusty has said a lot of times, and even I remember, you know, the one thing about, you know, Ray was hittable. Ray Robinson was hittable. And the thing that made Roy Jones Jr. so outstanding was that Roy wasn't. You know, where it wasn't. But yeah, but I remember he told me that. He told me that, you know, Art told me so many things. He told me something too, Rooney, that I couldn't believe. He told me that he never thought, and Dusty, I was astounded when he told me, he said he never thought, fellas, there'd ever be a black baseball player.
I'm not sure, Doc, coming up in a time of Arthur George. I can see him thinking that was a pipe dream, you know, given the time that, you know, he was, you know, raised and knowing the whole, you know, the whole
but Rooney,
the
but never, I mean, to think they would never be?
And there are people
well, you're
who
so,
say that they're not, there's people
you're
who
so
say
battered.
That they never thought there'd be a black president. I mean, I'm not that shocked about them thinking there would never be, or at least in our lifetime, I'll put it that way.
Okay. Dusty?
No, you're so brainwashed and battered and beaten, you know, through the decades and the centuries and the millenniums, man, that you're nothing, and you never would have wound to that. You know, you look at Jack Johnson. The guy had to go to Europe and offer the dude $30,000 to defend his heavyweight title in Europe. White folks were berating. What was it, Jack Sharkey or Tommy Burns? Mm-hmm. They're berating him for even taking the fight because that crown belonged to the white world. That was a white world's crown, man. So there's no such thing. What do you think Harry Wills, Jack Johnson, wouldn't touch him? I mean, the insulting garbage about the uncrowned heavyweight champ of the world, Harry Wills. How could he walk around and let people call him uncrowned when that punk Jack Johnson Dempsey will not fight him? I mean, so you know, we are led to believe and spoon-fed and brainwashed to believe that these things can never happen within our
just
culture.
Bring your point. Go ahead. Come on.
And you know, and what makes me laugh on a comical sense, we have nappy hair. What do? We go out there and we paint our hair and we straighten out, we process.
Hey, Dusty, I'm giving you a process, baby. Later for you. I'm getting me a process. You know what I mean?
And we process our hair to look pretty because of the other culture. And
because they got good hair.
And we didn't have any, so now we found the acid and the cream and the grease to say, hey, my hair is good as yours. But
you know, there's a very poignant part in the Malcolm X movie in the Spike Lee movie with Malcolm X.
That's a conk that we have to do every month, you know, to stay with on par with them. But so to finish up your commentary, the brainwasher couldn't do anything. And Rudy, you're right. I mean, it was impossible to realize a black man in the White House.
You hit that, Dusty. I didn't think. I thought America would have a white female president before they would have a black male president. And I'll never forget Willie Mays. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Depth Radio Show. Hey, two of the guys that make it what it is, Destino, Baby Lois, and Mel, Cosell Smith Jr. They showed a clip of Obama with Willie Mays. And Willie said the same thing. Willie said, you know, I never thought that, you know, there'd be a black president. I mean, you can see it in Willie's face, you know. And Obama said, well, hey, Dusty. He said, Willie, here we are on Air Force One.
On the night of his inauguration, Doc and Dust, you know, the day that he was officially, had officially won, and all the news media were, you know, officially proclaiming that he was going to be, you know, the new president of the United States. And when he first gave his very first speech as the president-elect, you know, Dustin, Doc, and I can kind of understand it. I didn't get quite that emotional, but I can kind of. There were many folks in that audience crying with tears in their eyes.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean, we go back to Joe Black. You know, Joe Black. You know, to dovetail on what you said, Dusty, and, you know, this pains me to agree with you. I mean, I probably have to take 2 weeks off. But on the real side, what you said, Dusty, you know, Joe Black talked about, you know, when he had hit the apex of his amateur career, and everybody's talking about going to the big leagues, and Joe was, you know, a little enamored. And when his wife went, Joe, he said, hold on, Joe, where you going? Where you going, Joe? Yeah. Joe, there ain't no black baseball players. This is it. Where you going?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'll give you a true-to-life story, man. When I first came into the job, doing some community work, I'm in uniform. I walk into a bodega, and, man, when I'm with my people, I go to my language. Oh, señor, dame acá un refresco ahí, este lo otro. The guy looked at me like if I had five heads. He looks at me, he says, are you a fireman? I says, yeah. I didn't know that they let Latinos in the fire department. I said, my Lord, of course. I mean, we don't have that many. But you're the first guy that is a fire. Oh, man, look. A specimen. Look, there's a Latino fireman in the fire department. Man, my son is. I said, look, here, this is what you. I don't know how you follow it, but what I'm saying to you is that this is the belief, this is the negativism that's been fed to us. The negatives have been brainwashed to believe that these things are not possible. Edwards, I forget the guy's first name, was supposedly the one who was being talked about as possibly the first black presidential candidate, remember? And he was killed in some fact-finding mission. I think it was in New Orleans or something. They never found his body. Light-skinned guy, Edwards. I think this is his last name was Edwards Brooks. Brooks Edward Brooks or Brooks Edwards. And he was the guy. But of course, there must have been rejoicing when the freaking plane went down and he was gone.
Who are you talking about?
I'm saying to you, yeah, but, huh?
Yeah, the plane went down?
But what I'm saying to you, huh? The plane went down on a fax. Yeah. Yeah, all his entire cabinet, his party. They were never able to recover him from the bayous, I think. The bodies, the planes were never found. You know, and that's basically what it is. Now, there's still resistance because did you read today's paper?
Mm-hmm.
There
no.
Three jackasses were initiating a campaign to Molotov cocktail Obama's congressional headquarters in Chicago. I mean,
you know, the thing about this, Dusty, is what you just, what we opened with, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Chain Sports Show. Well, we, you know, it's a sad commentary because you know what, Dusty, as shocking as it is, it's really no surprise. That's the sad part.
It's really no surprise. Because of the resistance. So everywhere you go, you're going to find resistance. And everywhere you go, people are going to say, oh, man, I never realized that we would ever have a black ball player or that we have a black player.
And you know, I got an article I got to get to you, cut you a minute, about the fire department that I had. And the thing about it, you know, you look at Dick Young, and Arthur George told me, my beloved Arthur George, Rooney, and Dusty, he told me, you know, when Jackie Robinson would come to the play, Arthur Rush told me that Dick Young would never call him Jackie Robinson, would always call him, here comes Captain Midnight.
Oh, I better watch my mouth. Are you kidding me?
I'm not surprised
coming from Dick Young.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, Dick was the guy that appealed to the Dodgers not to bring him up. No, baseball wasn't ready for a black ball player. But I remember, I'll never forget it, you know, Arthur told me, you know, he would never call him. Jack always called him, you hear this, Dusty? Captain Midnight.
Somebody didn't punch him in the face?
Well, evidently he never said it around Jackie.
No, not around Jackie. If he says it to me, he's insulting me as well as
Jackie. See, the thing about it was Arthur might have, you know, but he's up in the press box, you know, and, you know, and maybe Arthur said, call him Captain Midnight, man, Captain Midnight.
Wow, Jesus Christ! But that's the whole thing in a nutshell. I mean, people are brainwashed that they're not going to get out of that little pocket of non-achievement. But when
because you were doing the fire department thing, when it wasn't really, and it's still really not all that many Latinos or men of color in that particular profession. Then, because Dust, let me ask you this, and Doc, because obviously both of you have jobs that are pressure filled, so you know about the pressure. Dust, Doc, give me an idea, being a slightly younger than both of you a bit. What is that kind of the kind of pressure that a Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier or Willie O'Ree in hockey? What kind of pressure must that be like?
Well, I hate to say that it was as tough as Jackie's because it might not be true, but it was no picnic. You know, that's the only way I could describe it. You know. When you wind up and they look at you like I say, how the hell did this guy get into this job? You know, hey, just like you did, about perhaps with better qualifications, and then what my direction was to become a boss. Oh, I became a boss, man. So now I'm their boss, and this is how you do it, man. This is how you get in. There's resistances and they're scants and they look at you like I'm saying. I never forget the words I think you asked, and I think I said the program before, when I walked in as a rookie, all shining stars, my spit-shine shoes, and with my military creases on my uniform and everything, the guy says, uh-oh, here comes another one, there goes the neighborhood. I'll never forget that greeting. Never forget it. And I just got out of the Army, doing career, served my country, and here I'm not good enough to go into that firehouse. And I look at this piece of crap. I said, look at this. I never talked to him, never bothered, because at that time, perhaps I was more mature, more older, and more rebel than I was in previous years, because I was always a street kid, man. You know, even though I became a gentleman, I was a ghetto gangbanger. And I knew where this punk was coming from. But I didn't say, all right, that's cool. I'm in. Not because I had a hang on your frinkle, on your freckle face, man. I'm in because I merited coming in here, and having served my country and being on the list, I merited coming here. That's basically what it is. Then you don't see enough guys. that you do your own recruiting. This is how, you know, we do, I don't know if Doc agrees, but we do what is called the Trojan horse effect. You don't stand outside the gates and you throw rocks and rocks. You infiltrate and you get in. And from the inside, you say, hey, Jack, like I told our bodeguero, hey, tell your son to go here and do this and do that. You go on recruitment drives.
You know, it's amazing because I was in a renowned recruitment unit, you know what I mean? And they're pushing this drive toward Manutin. Hold on a second, gentlemen. What do we got here? Gentlemen, and those of us in the Sports and Deaf Nation, you know, we talked about the birthdays that are celebrated this month. Pioneers, people who have changed the course of not only African-American history, but society and the world. Today is the birthday of Master Richard St. Clair. As you know, we're worldwide. We know then that Mr. St. Clair, the master, is with us here on the line. Gentlemen, he's only got a few minutes, so we want to just get him in. We first, on behalf of the Sports and Deaf Nation, say happy birthday to you, Master Richard St. Clair, and thank you for joining us. And I know you've got to run, and you know Destinio Lois, one of our panel members, and also Mel Smith, Jr. So, gentlemen, let's everybody say happy birthday to Master St. Clair.
Well, happy birthday, Master St. Clair, and many more returns of the day.
Well, thank you very much.
And, you know,
that. Oh, what?
You were the forerunner, the pioneer, the man that brought in, it was the iron octopus. Am I correct?
Yes, I created iron octopus system.
Good. Could you talk a little bit about that before we let you go?
Well, the iron octopus system of martial art is a total survival defense system that I created. In 1972, I was teaching all over the country, even to law enforcement. It's a hands-on type of martial art. You know, everything is close-quartered or all-out martial art, a total self-defense system of martial art.
And you want something, you know, martial arts was something that you just always grasped as a youth. This is something you always liked and an area in which you always delved yourself into.
Yeah, since I was a young man, my father put me in the arts at 4 years old, and I've stayed with it until now, you know. So that's what I've done. That's what I love to do. And I had school all over the country at one time.
Mm. May I ask one quick question?
Sure.
Go ahead, Ron.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, and thanks for taking this question. Master Sinclair, for the uninitiated, with our many diverse fans listening as we speak, Master Sinclair, what would you most closely, you know, the ones that we know, your kung fu, karate, judo, jiu-jitsu, Gracie, jiu-jitsu, what would you most closely associate your style, technique, and system to, Master Sinclair, that the, you know, that the fans would know? Well, what would you basically say that your system is more of akin to, if you will?
Well, back in the day, I mean, the time when martial art was totally independent and individual, I was the first one to put the system together. Like, we did jiu-jitsu, aikijitsu, karate, and weaponry all together as one martial art, a total package. Now it's,
is that sort of like Bruce Lee's Jeet?
Jeet Kune Do, but that's a different. That's some kung fu martial art. This is all types of martial art, African art, you know, Japanese arts, all the arts that I knew, I put together, and I work it as a total defense system.
And this is a lot of this total defensive mechanism. No question about you. You also was looking at it from a standpoint of view of a defensive mechanism for females. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I had a big following. A lot of my black belts were ladies, and I did a woman's total self defense. I did all around the country. We did that, you know, woman upliftment and empowerment self defense structure. That's something else I created also.
Mm-hmm. And now you traveling. Didn't you have some classes or in other countries also?
Yeah, we had them all over, everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everybody, I taught thousands of black belts, and all of those individuals that went away to different countries, they opened their schools, and they were all doing a form of that, of the iron octopus.
Mm-hmm.
We also call it Iron Mazda.
What is your current thinking, and how would you rate the current more well known martial artists as far as the ultimate fighting championships and mixed martial arts as such? Well, how would you rate their level of skill, and how would you rate as a whole the various mixed martial arts federations that we see on TV and in the arenas?
Well, there's one thing about all the old masters, grandmasters. We always think of martial art as a great thing. All martial art that's taught to individual that they use for self-defense or whatever reason they use it for, as you keep it in the public eyes and they try to teach it to the kids, we always think martial art is great. So whatever style you're doing, we don't criticize the style of martial art you're doing. All style is good for something. It's good at, on some form of defense or to elevate or make a person better, whatever they do in life.
Mm.
So that's what I think of all martial art.
Yeah. Well, then that stands to reason, Rich, with when you talk in terms of bullying in the schools, where the kid is so low and you probably came across this, where kids are so beaten and down and they even think and attempt suicide because low esteem, and nobody thinks can help them, even the school system fails. So I would assume that something going through a training session of what you give brilliantly would sort of build up the kid's esteem and self confidence, not to make him in turn a bully, but I mean he now knows he has self confidence and could defend. That's what I meant. Could defend him or herself against anybody who's going to pick on him. Has that. From now on, that confidence in life that he could do he and she could do anything they want to do.
It's spiritual, it's physical, and it's something ingrained that not only it is in the martial arts, and the martial arts in itself has so much physical, spiritual injection, but what it does, Master, it can be a springboard and an advantageous mindset for life. In a lot of ways, as Dusty just talked, you unbeknowing have saved a lot of lives, but there's a spiritual side of this also, Master St. Clair, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's a thing we did in my system, something I created in 1983, which was the St. Clair Save Kids USA, where we go to different high school or public schools around the country, and we teach, the same concept of the bully structure. And we also teach to empower the kids with true values, the big brother, big sister structure of that, and to give them something to look forward to. And when you give a kid something, a goal, and they can see themselves becoming, or rising to a higher level, that person doesn't feel so depressed and is open to, a bully structure like that.
Mm.
And that's what we do. You teach all that.
You also brought another point up. It's about family. It's about respect. It's about honor. I will defend myself, but I'm not trying to kill you. I'm looking at, I am my brother's keeper. There's a family thing, and there's an honor injection that you're talking about too. Am I correct, Master St. Clair?
Absolutely, absolutely. Martial art, the structure of martial art was supposed to help open you up, uplift you, give you the confidence, the total confidence you need, and the yes I can attitude, and looking forward for a greater future. And it wasn't supposed to be used just to bully somebody or try to beat them up. It was a defense, only for self-defense, and that's what that was for. And that's the essence of the true martial art.
Well, martial arts, correct me if I'm wrong, the true martial art is also you give students, I guess maybe for lack of a better phrase, reading material where they will
absolutely
know the history.
Absolutely.
The history of how this started, what it means, what it's supposed to mean now, today and in the future that feeds their minds so that their bodies will then be coincided with what the mission is. I assume that's
absolutely probably, absolutely
yeah.
absolutely. You have in everything you have mission. The mission is to learn as much as you can about whatever you do in life. The more
yeah.
you know about whatever it is that you want to do or you are doing, the more you can open yourself to it and accept
right.
it and understand it more. And that's what the reading was all about. But today's structure, there's not a lot of reading. Today now people just
wow.
want to, you know, it's martial arts. I walk around and I'm going to be as bad as I can be or whatever. And it's changed a lot.
It's
changed a lot. So now the kids,
sort of thing,
yeah, exactly. So now the kids are the one that's really going through it because now, you know, you have school that's really projecting the structure of, and other schools are not, and so
mm-hmm.
you don't know which school you want to send your kids to, and that's
there's,
also you need to be able to read about the school and understand more about the schools also.
Well, what you say, Madam? There's no foundation. There's no structure. In a lot of ways, there's not. Master Sinclair, you know, the mindset has always been that the martial arts has always been an Oriental thing. Can you interject how much of an African influence these martial arts have?
Some things I don't like to get into because usually
okay.
when I'm having seminars and stuff, I really get into it in depth.
Mm-hmm.
But. Every structure in the world or was ever in any society, every society, I should say, had a form of martial art.
Hmm.
So it's not just a Japanese thing. It's not just a Chinese thing. It's not just an Oriental thing. Everybody has martial art. African has a very little martial arts. Filipino has martial art. You know, Hawaiian
yep.
has martial art. You know, everybody has a fighting method, which we call martial art.
Hmm.
You know, the Romans had their martial art. Every
wow.
country has their martial art. You know, every era has their structure of martial art. And so, you know, it's very arrogant to think that you are the only one that knows martial art. All martial art comes from you. So that's how I feel about that.
Well, hey, it was coming from the master. Like I said, Master Sinclair, you know your time is limited. If you have to leave, just leave. But, you know, we're going to try to hold you as long as we can. Any more questions from the panel for Master Rick Sinclair,
well, you know,
who we celebrate the birthday?
The other day we had a young man talk about Apoeira, which was a cultural dance.
Oh, yeah, the Brazilian.
Yeah, the Brazilian. And they have integrated a form of martial arts as they were dancing, you know. And I've seen them perform, and it is magnificent. So is that something that you would consider integrating in your classes? I do have that.
And the reason why we had part of that is because I do a lot of African martial art. And capoeira
mm-hmm.
is an African martial art.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
right.
and what happened when it went to Brazil, they couldn't practice that anymore. They were all slaves, and they couldn't practice it. So they
yeah.
make it into a dance.
Wow.
So by the chanting and dancing, so they make the movement, like a kata, in the dance structure. So the people would think they're trying to, you know, entertain them
mm-hmm.
while they truly still learn their martial art.
Is it true that Master St. Clair, in a lot of ways, that it was a combination of a defense mechanism, the continue of the culture, but also they use that as an escape hatch? You know, they're so busy dancing, and some of it was had a dual purpose. You know,
yeah, it always has three sides to everything like that. You know, so there's always different reasons for doing it, but the main structure was I want to still practice. I don't want to, you know, in case there's a revolution, I want to know what I'm doing. I want to know how to fight. How do we use it without letting anybody know that's what we're doing? And that was
nice.
Very
the
ingenious.
The music came in, yeah.
Yeah, that was very ingenious. So they have the music, you know, and then they start dancing and having a little fun. And suddenly the guys came on and started doing all their moves. And we know those moves as katas. And they're called katas, you know, in the structure of martial art. And so they practice their kata. Just like every art practices there. You know, every army practices their thing. Everybody practices whatever it is that they learn. And that's the idea, to keep it going, to keep the lineage going, to, so that it doesn't die away and pass away. You pass it on. And that's how you carry the lineage.
Mr. Sinclair, I've always been kind of fascinated with the Brazilian system, specifically Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, because unlike most systems, Master Sinclair, it seems that their system works from the bottom up as opposed to the top down, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, the idea is, look, there's many styles of martial art. Some of the martial art is standing. Some martial art is African kneeling. Some martial art is taking to the ground. And so for you to be totally rounded, it's good to know all of those, you know. So no one martial art is the greatest of all martial art in the world. So combined, it's what they always call it, you know, now they call it all combined martial art, because if you know how to fight on top, you know how to be a great boxer, kicking and all that, and then you know how to get to the middle, and then you know how to hit on the ground and grapple and tie him up like a wrestler would do, and you put it all together, and that's what it is. It's, you know, it's the structure of wrestling, and that everybody learned over. We used to learn it in high school wrestling, and you use that.
Yes,
and you,
I did
you learn,
that. Yeah.
Yeah, and you do all the different kind of locks and releases and all the things like that, and then you do the standing where you learn the boxing. And America was well known for greatest boxer of all times, you know. So you mix them all together, and then you get something fantastic.
Harold, did you know Harold Weston with us yet?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Harold, we got Master St. Clair. We want you to first say happy birthday to him. And,
oh, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Harold, you any questions for Master St. Clair?
Yeah, did you ever know of a guy named Ronnie Van Cleef?
Sure.
He's a good friend of mine.
He's the Black Dragon.
Right.
Yeah.
Good friend of mine. We go way back in the 60s and stuff.
Oh, I know him very well.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, Howard, I have a good friend who also is very tight with Sensei Van Cleef. Yeah, very good actor, great martial artist.
Great martial artist.
I actually saw him once in an Ultimate Fighting match against the great Hoist Gracie. Tremendous match. At the time, I believe he was somewhere around 50 years old and still gave the great submission Gracie Jiu-Jitsu specialist, Hoist Gracie. A tremendous match, the great Ron Van Cleef. Tremendous martial artist, very good actor.
Yeah.
Doc
Stanley,
Sports Network on the Blake, with an Over Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Network, the show. The gang was here, but we're paying homage and salute to Master Richard St. Clair. We're trying to keep him as long as we can, and then he'll have to. Master St. Clair,
one more question, I have to go.
Okay. Well, listen,
I'll call you at home if I want to talk to you.
Okay.
You made some movies and produced. Can you talk about some of the movies? Not only that, I'm trying to get three in one. You were the bodyguard to Elton John, some very prominent people. You know, ladies and gentlemen, this is a very modest man. This is a man of great stature, class, and dignity. One of the finest human beings who walked the earth. A man of honor. You know, very few people have honor. Very few people have gained, earned their respect. This is a man who has done that, and this is a man who was suffering little children to come. He worked with the children. I saw him in his own in-home studio. This is when you look in the dictionary and you see the word man, his picture is there. And could you just talk briefly about some of the movies and some of the stars that...
I got to go now. I have to go. It's my birthday today, and I have to go now.
Well, give us two names.
I'm not going to give any names. Everybody that knows me knows I've done a lot of choreography, done a lot of movies, we did a lot of stuff. So, you know, they know what I do and who I am. If they say they don't and they know me, they're lying. You know, so what are you going to do?
Gentlemen, one more time, happy birthday to Mrs. Master St. Clair. Thank you for being here. Gentlemen, happy
birthday,
Master St. Clair. Right,
thank you.
Happy
good
birthday,
talking
Master
to you.
St. Clair. All it's right, been
now.
An honor.
Thank you.
We were honored to have him. Master Richard St. Clair, Iron Octopus. I mean, just some of the names of the people that I know. He bought Elton John, you know what I mean? The great
Elizabeth Taylor.
Go ahead.
A lot of people. Yeah. Okay.
Hey,
all right. Bye. I have to go
that was
now.
A lot by itself. Elizabeth Taylor, Elton John. Thank you, Master St. Clair.
All right.
Gentlemen, we're going to take a little quick break, come back here, and as we continue on Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Depth for the show. Our special guest there is Birthday Boy, Master Richard St. Clair.
Opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best, featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
And if you just join us now, first almost 50 minutes of Sports in Depth, and we just had our guest, one of our guests, Master Richard St. Clair, who celebrated the birthday today. You know, Richard was one of the foremost components of what he did, and a gentleman that really come back. You know, Richard suffered a massive heart attack there, and by the grace of God, he's still with us, and has been one of the pioneers, one of the proponents of the martial arts. Just tremendous education, and you know, I always said that so much of the Brazilian Kawada was a situation where it was a defensive mechanism, as you also said, with escape mechanism, and kept the linkage, the practice, and the history of the African art. And some people don't realize that it was the Africans that brought the Muslim religion to America. And, you know, slaves back in the slavery days learned how to read upside down. So when the master walked in, he would say, oh, okay. You know, and I was earlier talking to Chief Petty Officer Anthony Emil Nieuwendam, who had been on our show some time ago, and we talked about there was my good buddy Steve Glazer had made a bet with a friend of his that there was no such thing as a $500 bill. And the guy said, well, yeah, I tell you what, I'll bet you you'll have to buy me a beer that there isn't such thing as a $500 bill. And there was not only a $500 bill, there was a $1,000 bill, okay? There was a $10,000 bill. There was a $5,000 bill. And lo and behold, Woodrow Wilson was on the $100,000 bill, which you could turn in and redeem for gold. Woodrow Wilson, as we continue the derogatory, disrespectful mindsets toward African Americans, as the Postal Service was starting to be implemented in his era, felt that African Americans had no place. You know what I mean? They were beneath it. They kind of basically were useless. Him and his wife used to crack derogatory jokes about African Americans in the White House, and he felt they just kind of really had no existence, no need for existence. The great story was told, too, about the achievement we talked earlier, about how Theodore Roosevelt invited Booker T. Washington to the White House. First time ever, the most prominent African-American of his particular time from Tuskegee. And there was an uproar about this, an uproar. Wow, how dare can he invite this nigga to the White House? And the Ku Klux Klan was going to solve it. They had no problem. They had no problem. They went down to the train station. They were going to pull him off the train and hang him. Situation solved. But they couldn't find him. couldn't find him. They went through the train, couldn't find him. And the reason why they couldn't find him, because he had his own compartment. And they didn't think that any way, shape, or form that a nigger would have enough money to have his own compartment. So the fact that he was affluent and he had his own compartment, it never entered their mind that he could be have his own compartment on the plane. So when they didn't see him sit there, boom, they left, you know?
You know, Doc, that shows what a bad man Jack Johnson was. Because I remember watching some film footage of him defending his title in some park, which was seriously about 20,000, 30,000 people. And basically him and, like, the entire, obviously, crowd ruling against him. I mean, like, 20. And, Doc, I mean, if you just saw the size of that crowd, and this guy basically doing it by himself, in spite of all of that hostility and all those people, he had a lot of heart, man. The guy was fearless.
It was no question that he fit the term baddest man on the planet, okay? And people understand, you know, when Jack Johnson fought Jeffries for the title, to beat him for the title, okay, it was the first time ever women, of course, white, were allowed to sit ringside, you know, at a fight in period, and that fight had no prelim, no undercard. You came to see only the main event and the main event only. And the late Bert Sugar had talked to him in past years, and one of the reasons why Jack Dempsey's manager would never let him fight a black fighter, because knowing that if Dempsey lost, he felt the same kind of retribution, outcry would have happened that happened when Jack Johnson won. As we know, all across America, December 26, 1908, they went crazy. They were lynching, they were hanging, they were robbing,
yep,
they were raping, they were
black
killing townships. Black people all over America, because now nigger was the heavyweight champion of the world. It's ironic that 26th of December is an ironic day and a very pivotal day in African history, because on that date in 1964, Red Auerbach, who probably maybe really was the greatest coach, well, he had Russell, like Oscar said, but that day, Red Auerbach sent out on the court in Boston, for the first time ever in NBA history, five black players. At guard, Sam Jones from North Carolina A&T, and at the other guard, Casey Jones from the U of San Francisco. At the center, Bill Russell from the U of San Francisco. At one forward, Thad Sanders from NYU. And at the other forward, from UCLA, Willie Nall. First time ever in the history of professional basketball. And Harold, you had talked about that Mann Act thing, because, you know, the man, you look at the thing. And, in fact, you know, real quick before we get to that, you were talking about the fire department. And I have an article here. I was over at my mother's house yesterday doing some painting, me and my beloved brother James. It's an article from Sunday, October 2nd, 2011. And it just shows the racist mindset of America. You know, the story up top is Dave Stepkid in bloody battle. You know, ex-governor David Patterson's stepdaughter was busted yesterday after bashing her boyfriend over the head with a bottle during a fight in the West Village apartment,
yeah,
cops said. I mean, you know, how do you arrest the ex-governor's daughter? You know, only if the ex-governor is black, you know? And then the story underneath that is even better. Black bravers celebrate FDNY discrimination finding. The black firefighters whose lawsuit could fundamentally change the face of the FDNY cheered yesterday the federal judge's ruling that the fire department habitually discriminated against minorities. Judge Nicholas Garofis ruled that the FDNY, which is 93% white, had systematically discriminated against candidates of color and did not do an adequate job in investigating black firefighters' complaints of bias. He also suggested that a court-ordered special monitor would be needed to oversee the charges in the FDNY. In 150 years of the FDNY, they have proven they can't be trusted to do it themselves, says Paul Washington, former president of the Vulcan Society, which filed a lawsuit later joined by the U.S. Justice Department. They weren't going to change on their own, Washington said. Cooters concluded the three-week trial in Brooklyn Federal Court by ruling that the FDNY's hiring process and informal friends and family recruitment network and demanded that it change. It seems the judge really gets how the FDNY works, Washington said. There are reasons why black firefighters and Latin firefighters don't feel comfortable applying for this job. City officials, which have long opposed the special monitor, vehemently disagreed with the judge's ruling. That's all you need to know. City officials, okay? City officials, which have long opposed the special monitor, vehemently disagreed with the judge's ruling. Fire officials have also pointed out that 48% of applicants for the FDNY's upcoming exam are minorities, more than double the number of those who applied for the last test in 2007. And as often things change, they remain the same. You told me how the Mann Act, implemented by United States government, United States government, okay, not the Ku Klux Klan, which might have been, United States government implemented the Mann Act to get Jack Johnson, which said that a black man can't take a white woman across a straight line, even though having to be his wife. The Mann Act, and ironically about this thing, it was Judge Mountain Keyshore Landis who presided over this case, and this is the same guy who became commissioner of baseball that kept black people out of baseball. And he, it's supposed to have been a buddy of Jack Johnson. But you told me somehow, you said Jack Johnson told him he'd come in, but there's no handcuffs.
And they didn't handcuff him. And he didn't handcuff him. And I mean, you know, that's the amazing part about Jack Johnson that a lot of people don't know, is that, you know, it's like we know that he fought in an arena where nothing but white people was at. If there was just a few, they were way up in the stands and everything. He was fighting white fighters and beating them and laughing at the same time. And then this time, this is what Muhammad Ali said. He said, Ali always said, I was not bad. Jack Johnson was the baddest man to ever walk this planet. And that's very true. I mean, he used to go to bed with white women, and they knew about it. And a white and a girl that was, you know, prostitutes, they got fired. Because they went to bed with Jack Johnson. Mm. I mean, that's how crazy it was. But he pretty much did what he wanted to do. But he stayed among, you know, within the law of things. But Jack Johnson walked this earth by himself. He didn't have no Ku Klux. Muslims bodyguards and all that stuff.
Bodyguards,
he did this thing by himself. So that was the baddest man that ever walked the planet of Earth.
He really was. I mean, 25,000-30,000 people, because that kind of heat. And you, like you said, Harold and Dustin, Doc, I mean, doing it by yourself, man, it's pretty large in the park, man, and you, like, just thumbing your nose at them, like, let it fall where it may.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking the government, you know, implemented these things against it. I remember when Jack Johnson died, the car accident, and supposedly one of the papers wrote, you know, Jack Johnson crossed the white line for the last time, and he was the guy who supposedly threw the title. And they tell the story about fighting Stanley Ketchel. I remember that name because when I was in the military, that was my nickname. They kidnapped Stanley Ketchel because his name was Stanley, and you know, Jack was carrying Stanley Ketchel, middleweight champion, is carrying, and Ketchel like. Like Billy Conn got out of hand, and he knocked Johnson down.
Yep.
You know, Johnson got up.
Yeah,
knocked him out.
Got uppity.
he must thought he was one of them. And
that's right. Ketchum got
Johnson
uppity.
Knocked him out.
Johnson says, "Uh oh."
And they found two of his teeth. They found two of Stanley Ketchum's teeth in Jack Johnson's glove after he knocked out Stanley Ketchum. Nate B. Baseball will be joining us about another 2 or 3 minutes.
But let me explain to you, too.
Don't
Jack
stop,
Johnson Harold. Was not the baddest black fighter in the world at that time, you know.
Who was
he
Harold?
Really
Come
was.
On, baby. Keep the lesson
he,
going.
He got whipped quite a bit before he started moving up and started fighting,
white
started,
fighters.
Other fight, you know, main fight, white fighters and all that. Mm. But he got beat up all the time with the black fight. There was quite a few black fighters that beat Jack Johnson. Mm. And so,
wasn't there a guy named Peter Molyneux, who was also a light heavy or heavyweight, who was an ex-slave? He took over a French name. And then there was another guy who was, and Sam Langford, even though he lost him, Sam Langford gave him a whipping.
Yeah,
he gave him a whipping.
Langford,
when he fought Jack Johnson, he was old at that time.
Yeah, he was already
he
old.
Old.
Again,
what, Harold, what weight
was
he? What weight was he, Dusty Harold? What weight was he?
Well, he had Langford. To be all of a welterweight, middleweight.
Oh, yeah,
60,
he was middleweight. That's
60.
All he was, 160.
Yeah.
Wow.
60 pounds.
Yeah, I mean,
and
he said Jack would beat. I'm telling you, Jack wasn't that. Jack could beat all the white fighters, but Jack couldn't beat them black fighters. Really?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is why I tell you that you got to be here on a Sunday. You got to be here to hear the gospel of the truth. You got to be here to hear Dusty go back to the days with him and Lil David. You got to be here with Harold. You got to be Dusty. Did I say that? We got you. But on the serious side, you listen to Master Richard Sinclair. Did you hear what Harold said? Did you hear what Dusty? You got to be here. Continue, gentlemen.
There was somebody else. I was trying to remember that. Sam Lanford was the master. Harold, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm going back into the medieval days, but he was the master of the bob and weave.
Right.
You can't touch me. He would tell a dude, you see this dime? I'm going to stand on the dime, and I want you to throw everything at me, but you're not going to move me from this dime, man.
Yeah.
And sure enough, the dude would throw, and Sam would move, bob, weave, get up, pull back, and the guy would catch pneumonia throwing punches at Sam, and not one landed. That was a master.
Yeah, he had a heck of a defense and everything.
Right.
But, what everybody don't know about, Jack Johnson was a real bright guy. You know, Jack Johnson souped up his own car. He made a motor in his car to make his car go faster than any other cars that was out there back in those days. That was the whole thing about Jack. Jack wasn't a real dumb guy. He was a pretty, pretty brilliant guy himself. And he knew how to play the law and the system and everything.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the other African-American, fighters and people, they didn't want to take the chance. Jack just had a lot of heart, and he was smart. Yeah. He did a lot of reading and stuff like that. And that's what people didn't know about Jack Johnson. They thought he was dumb, but he was very smart. He knew how to play the game, and he knew what to do to get the fight for the championship fight. And they orchestrated the way how to do it. They did it, and a lot of people don't understand how that whole thing was going down. But Jack Johnson knew what to do and how to deal with the white establishment, and that's why he got the title.
But, Harold, what would you say? Good evening to the panel.
Hey,
C-Wings. Good evening to our listeners out there. And
Hold on. You don't just jump in and introduce yourself. You wait till you call on to, young man. Especially when you hear your elders talking like Dusty. Should I say that, Dusty? I'm sorry. Good day, gang. You know, beyond the knowledge you learn here, this is friends and this is family. These are people, who make this show what it is. And let me go down the line here. Harold Weston Jr. And this man was the matchmaker, the only African American matchmaker in the history of Madison Square Garden. Now, no matter where boxing goes in the future, it'll never be the temple of boxing at Madison Square Garden. And boxing, for its own intents and purposes, I mean, the man didn't lie. When he left, boxing left. When he left, it was done. Not only mention, the man is one of the great welterweights of his time and the MSG welterweight champion, okay? Destino Baby Lois, okay? Another pug of renown and class and character. And a man, when I read that story, I mean, you have to understand, this man was a fire lieutenant in the fire department. Blacks and Latins didn't make the... First of all, how did he get the job? He made much of told me he couldn't speak English or something. But on the real side, you understand what this man has done, what he's been through. A man who was... Everybody talks about Ralph Mercado. Dusty promoted a whole lot of shows. Dusty emceed a whole lot of Latin shows. Mel Cosell. Little Coco. Enough said, baby. WWF. How many get in and get out? And then there's my man, C-Wings. This man is a captain in the New York City Police Department. So that means he is New York's finest. But you have to understand the great line of these men as African-Americans, what Arthur Ashe said. Okay? We have to be twice as good, okay, to get half a chance. And they did it with those rules. And exceeded to heights unparalleled. Did it under those rules. Twice as good to get half a chance. Okay? And they're here. And the educate. Did you hear Master St. Clair? Every week, Harold and Seagrings and Dusty and Lady A and Mel Cosell are regurgitating history, spitting out facts that you never heard, stuff that it was, if you remember, we told you about Bin Laden being taken down. But what about the other historical thing that you hear here? And we just, we thank you for listening. And as I reach out across to my family and Rosie, I mean, here's a lady who is learning the English language, and yet she finds time every week to tune in to Sports in Depth, you know. And then we'll go ahead over to Holland and Moken and present, wherever we're heard, we thank you. And we thank you, and I thank these men, because to others, I am somebody. That great line by Walter Whitman, I no doubt deserve my enemies, but I doubt if I deserve my friends. And these are friends, and we want to take your time to tell you, www.blakeradio.com, okay? You want to make a donation, we'd love to have it. DocStanleySports.com, Trust in God, Sports in Depth, Entertainment, Artifacts, Museum, DocStanleySports.com. You want to get me personally, DocStanley@AOL.com. We've talked some more baseball. We've got a good solid hour left to go here. But just want to take the time out, you know, so many times Dusty, and you're right, we were stunned he could read, but he can read. But every week he's telling us something. I mean, this guy in Hume's digests the newspapers. He gives us the Latin side, the African-American side. Look at how I told you. Look at how I told you. Jack Johnson was the baddest man on the planet, but he wasn't the baddest dude in the neighborhood.
We have, but you know, we also have to advise folks to get the book on Jack Johnson, which I consider, forgive me for using his word, the Bible of Jack Johnson. That's a book called Unforgivable Blackness.
Mm.
And it was made into a series on PBS Channel
13. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say waste my time. I saw it on TV, but they also had the book, and I went to Borders before defunct, and I got the book. It's a Bible on Jack Johnson. This is the primordial, outside of all the other little booklets and excerpts that they wrote. This is the Jack Johnson saga, and it is like refreshing, and it gives you incentives and makes you realize how fortunate you are that we had a man like that in our existence. That he didn't just knock down doors; he tore the hinges off the doors, man. And this is basically what I keep telling folks. I said, you buy Unforgivable Blackness and keep it in your library as a keepsake, because that's a textbook. That's required reading in life of this man, you know, and from the very beginning, when he went out of Galveston, Texas, I think that's when he came out of Galveston. He says, I'm not going to be governed by anybody. I'm going to do my own thing. Bingo, you got the book. And that's basically what it is. And sure, there were a lot of other good black boxers who gave him a hard time and beat him, but the man was a master. The man was a master.
Is
he was
true,
scoring.
Is it true? Is it true that you went five rounds with Jack?
I carried his satchel. I carried his satchel into the ring. I gave him instructions.
And there was Lou Harrell up in the balcony. Throw the hook, baby. Throw the hook. Man. They don't get any better than this. See, Wings,
really
we got you here.
Let me just say this right quick. Our panel, you know, we got to keep those donations coming, you know, to our, you know, to the Blake Radio Network. And I know you gave the place to send them back.
www.blakeradio.com, Rainbow Soul. www.blakeradio.com, Rainbow Soul. Go ahead, Winnie.
No, I was just going to quickly say that because you're not going to get this on any other station. I'm in any other station in the country, in the world. You know,
universe,
you're not
going
to get this. Well, you know, we don't give it to you. We give it to our people straight. Okay, the Howard Westerns, the Latino Baby Loises, the Doc Stanleys, the Sea Wings. You know, you're not going to get this from Lady A's. You know, you're not going to get this from
ESPN.
You're not going to get this from FAN and the Hoops, of course. Thanks, guy. You're not going to get this from ESPN. You're not going to get this from FAN. You're not going to get this from YSP in Philly, okay? The only place you're going to get this kind of talk straight on the money, no holds barred, is right here.
Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Network, the show, and that's where it's happening at. See, Wings, I was at an affair Tuesday. Joe Klecko, Joe Namath, Akeem Nix, Harry Carson, my favorite of the Jet players, Dustin Keller. You know, the season is coming upon us as we move into the month of June and August. Okay, what's the latest? And you know, and Joe Klecko said something about Tebow that really hit the point. And I said, you know, here's a guy.
Remember
here's
that?
A guy.
Yeah.
Here's a guy now who won his division, okay, who beat the Steelers in the playoffs and took his team to the playoffs. And, but you know what Klecko said? What Tebow brings to New York? He brings integrity, a man of his word. He said, and, you know, that's a pretty good thing to have around here. See, Wayne, she said, this is a guy that is like the panel here, straight shooter, no nonsense, a man of class and character. And this is what Klecko said. You know, he ended the interview. I may have find it. We're running late. Klecko said, hey, man, this is a guy of integrity. I mean, you were talking about a locker room of disarray and this and you take how I feel about the locker room stuff. But the thing is, he said, "C Wings, here's a guy. Here's an honest guy. Here's a leader." C Wings.
Yes, I'm here. I mean, you would have to agree with him. I mean, you see, Tebow's is a nice young man, well mannered. I mean, he has a large following. Just by his faith and generally just a good guy. I mean, something he doesn't seem to be that brute that everyone basically views of an NFL player. I mean, a big brute,
right.
Rough and tough. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's a big guy. He's a strong guy. But he also has that delicate balance with the, you know, down to earth. He says he's still a virgin. I mean, that's a big thing, I guess, with the ladies and, you know, everyone looks upon that with the Christians. Well, you know, I think he's going to add something to the team. It already looks like the locker room is starting to rally behind him. I mean, you had, I got a brain fart here, but Revis, you know, had a lot to say about him, Mangold. So it looks like, you know, the pieces are starting to fall into place, and it really puts Mark Sanchez on a burner, you know, really on a hot seat at this point. He has to play nearly imperfect, perfect, to not lose his starting job to Tim Tebow. So,
well,
I mean, it's really going
to
be interesting.
Yeah, to piggyback on what you said, but, Doc, you also remember that Klecko said something which I have been looking at for the longest time in terms of Tebow. He brought a defunct or not the well non-performing team to a playoff, at least one playoff game, and beat the mighty Steel Curtain with one Hail Mary shot. And John Elway, who the general manager, should have had enough consideration and respect for the guy to say, "Hey, he brought us this far. Let me give him another season," and he was happy to dump him in terms of a man who I suspect is not in any condition to play football. And I that to me is the epitome of how an athlete is treated like cattle. You know, they just wanted to find some way to dump him, which the Jets were willing to take him. But here's the kid who needed a few receivers, a few more players, and who knows if he would have turned the Denver Broncos into a championship team. It's not all just the quarterback. It's the other ball players too. And Klecko was right on the money when he said that. He says that's why the Broncos should have given him a shot. And they're true. It's true because now you create a soap opera in New York City, of who's going to be in Sanchez. Yes, you're right, C-Wings. Sanchez is on the mark saying, "Oh, my God, now I got to do, and I got to do, and I got to do. If I don't do, well, then he's going to take over." And people are going to start chanting in the audience, "Tebow, Tebow, Tebow, goodbye, Mark, Mark, Mark." And that's what's going to happen.
You know,
that's what
you're saying. You're saying what Skip Bayless And everybody, look out in the bullpen. Nate B. Baseball is warming up. Wave at Nate. Everybody say hi to Nate. He's warming up out there.
Hey, what's up, guys?
There's our Mario Rivero. He's warming up in the pen, man.
Bring the heat.
And what? Skip Bayless said, he said the scenario. He said, okay, the Jets are going to beat the Bills. He said, then they're going to lose the next four games, and then Tebow's going to come in with the Jets at 1-4. Stephen A. Smith said, no, Skip. As naturally, Stephen A. always was skipping over what he's talking about. He said, Skip.
Those guys, man, they're funny.
He says, Hey, they ain't as good as me and you, Dusty. Don't get carried away now. And Stephen A. said, no. He said, they're not going to pull him at the fifth game. The Jets are going to win two more games. The Jets are going to be 3-4. And then he says, in comes Tebow. C-Wings, when does he come in now? Joe Namath said, he's the best quarterback. Dustin Keller, remember doing that interview, he said, I asked him, good scenario. He said, hey, but Sanchez is the man. When do you see, or do you see, Tebow becoming the number one quarterback on this team?
I'm going to say the first, I'm going to look at preseason. Even preseason, you don't play as hard.
Absolutely.
But that is a prelude to what you're going to do in the season. I mean, you have a long, the season ends, especially if you don't, make it to the postseason. Your season really ends in the first week of January. So you do have a long time off. Some of these guys like to keep themselves in shape. But I'm telling you, I'm looking to see those first couple of preseason games, see how this guy has matured. Don't get me wrong, Sanchez, he puts up big numbers, but he also puts up big interception numbers. And that's all these fans are waiting for, especially with the influx of Tebow. If this guy tends to throw the passes like he did last year, he's toast. You're going to hear, you're going to see the signs come up, and I guarantee you this, you're going to see some signs in the stadium that says, Sanchez, who?
Finally you have a backup quarterback that there's no reason why you can't put this guy in the game. I mean, we had the guy last year. He was there, but he never got into the game. He played last year against Buffalo. So now you were kind of against this, weren't you, C-Wings, from the giddy-up?
I mean, the problem with Tim Tebow and it's his completion ratio. He's not well, he was under 40, was he about 42%, 43%, something like that, which that's the problem with him. You can only run but so much before you get hurt in this league. I mean, Michael Vick is a poster child for that. He's just not as mobile as he used to.
Quit picking on the brother, baby.
It's true. I mean, look at the hits over the years that Michael Vick have taken when he played for Atlanta. I mean, you could only take so many hits by the, a quarterback is not really built for that. Not the consistency run like what's
Well, not only that, the equipment that he wears is not designed for him to take a lot of hits. It's designed for him to throw the football.
You could actually use this.
My philosophy on this is, and that is true, running quarterbacks get absolutely destroyed in the NFL. There's no question about this. But I'm talking about C-Wings running with a twist. I'm saying you can use both quarterbacks in situations. And I don't know why everyone seems to be so set. You can have some situational quarterbacking. I mean, if the play calls for
Rooney, aren't you tipping your hand? It's 3rd and 3, and Tebow's in there. Aren't you saying run as opposed to 3rd and 3 with Sanchez? Well, you said, we may lean toward the pass. But he may run. I mean, Tebow's not Jim Brown, but
ordinarily, Doc, Ordinarily, that would be the case. You bring you just took Sanchez out. You just brought in Tebow, and you're like, okay, they're going to run the ball hard on this, but otherwise, why are they taking the pass route? But Doc, if you got some game, as you said, a little sight, you can make that run for you. Okay, so you're
going to go the other way. You're right. You go the other way. You go the other way. I mean, Tebow's the quarterback, so now you got the defense sign for the run on 3rd-and-2, and bam, he hits home for the touchdown because you were playing.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah, okay. No, it was.
But the questionable was his completion rate. That's the problem. Has he improved in the off season? And also, did the Jets get him because he's a better quarterback, or they could get him because they will be relevant again, at least in the media aspect, in the New York market?
You supervisory guys always on the play this cerebral game, like you're ready for politics. You know, right now, did they get him for the team, or they're looking? I mean, you know, what's you know,
this is a think tank, Mister.
All you test takers, man, ready for politics.
but it's true.
Dusty and Harold should know this better than anybody else. Okay, fainting with the right and setting them up for a left hook. Fainting with the left hook and
Tim Tebow here, besides the publicity in suit, what was the rationale to bring him in here? To enhance and improve the team, and I guess maybe put pressure on Mark. Hey, we got somebody that can replace you. Now, like I keep saying, if Tebow had some 2 or 3 quality receivers in Denver, I couldn't see why John Elway couldn't keep him. He just didn't want to keep him. And
why was it such a personal? Nothing he did seemed to. I mean, it just seemed to be personal. I mean, the guy won the division. They were 1-4 when
exactly.
he came in. So he turns around and goes 8-8. I mean, why was this? I mean, see, we.
I don't have John Elway's crystal ball as to why this.
Go down and ask
Consuela.
She's got one. Come on, quit playing, Dusty.
Because John Elway himself was a mediocre quarterback until he won those 2 back-to-back. John Elway was an ex-baseball player until he went to Denver.
Well, Elway was a great quarterback.
But now because he won back-to-back, well, now he's a massive quarterback. He's not. Here's where you got a kid. I follow T-ball from college because I follow high school T-ball all the way up to the pros. And T-ball was a damn good quarterback in college, man. You know,
Tebow won the Heisman as a sophomore.
Exactly.
Nobody ever won the Heisman as a sophomore.
Absolutely.
He had a chance to win it back to back with Archie Griffin, or even 3 shots. So the guy won. He won that conference every year. He won the Heisman. You're right, Dusty. He won the Heisman
Absolutely.
As a sophomore. Nobody ever won as a sophomore. Well, I didn't play college football, but you know.
So you bought yourself a quality quarterback that you had to indoctrinate and spoon-feed and breastfeed into the majors. But there was seemed to be a mindset with Elway that, you know, he's there only for the present because I lost the other guy. Was the other guy Norton, whatever his freaking name was. Mm-hmm. And then when Tebow took over and won 7 or 8 straight, he still didn't change his mind. He still didn't see that the adrenaline and the techniques were in there to make the team respectable. He put the Denver Broncos into the playoffs, and even if they lost or won
Joe Klecko said what you're saying, Dusty. He said the guy took him to the division, won the playoffs. C-Wings, let me get back to you. Nate's about done, gang. He's about ready to call him in. He's not working. C-Wings, is he a better leader than Sanchez?
Tim Tebow, I can't say for sure. I mean,
you
can't compare it
Hold. Is Sanchez a leader?
I think Sanchez is a good leader.
I need an answer here. I definitely think
he's a good leader. He's a good leader in the locker room. We did pick up some tension there, but I still think that the team rallied behind him. I mean, he. You look at the back-to-back wins. I think it was, what was it, the 2010 season, where they had the comeback wins against the Browns, against the Texans.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could be a good quarterback and don't have the respect of your team, or you could be a pretty good quarterback and you have the respect of your team, which I think Sanchez still has. But you ever see the cartoon where the person's walking the plank and the alligators are there and the person's holding on to the plank? I think that's the case here. I mean, you make any mistake, and these New York fans are going to turn on them.
Hey,
it's like they did Chad Pennington.
Well, don't you think that Tebow and Sanchez have two different types of philosophical leaderships? And it's a double-edged sword here. Two different types of leaderships. However, the team gels to one as opposed to the other. Because of who they are, these guys are individuals. Oh yeah, we're the best of friends. We get along fine.
But
their philosophy is totally different.
Was definitely a different philosophy in the two, but I think they can coexist. And the big key with Tebow, I think he has the personality and the fortitude to be able to play here in the New York market. That's
right.
That's a biggie.
That's hold on,
that
gang.
That is very important in the New York
Don't
market.
Move. Gentlemen, Doc Stanley Sports Network, the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Network, the show. When we come back, he's taking a long walk in. Our number 42, Nate B is a baseball.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com, music for your mind, body, and soul.
Got a chance to do the week. I'll do a dugout duck segment with my good friend, my beloved Dusty Baker. Dusty was funny. I always wore number 12, and I had a feeling it was Tommy Davis, and he told me it was. Maybe I'll catch an interview. Maybe we'll do that. Maybe tonight not. But we got Nate B. I was at the game. Pettit, tremendous game. They asked Joe, you know, what was he impressed by this second outing? He said everything. They asked him, you know, you didn't pull him out after the seventh inning. No, he was up near 100 pitches, but you let him go out in the eighth inning. And he said, well, you know, I let him go. And he talked about the fact that he said he thinks Pettit is a more complete pitcher now. He's added a backdoor cutter and a changeup, and he's really throwing the changeup more. And something hit me, Nate. When he let him come out in the eighth inning, because I was thinking, why not let him pitch the ninth? I mean, a complete game. I mean, how many times are you going to get that? To give the he brought a non-reliever in, but you know you give the bullpen a rest. But the thing here too was that he brought him in the eighth inning because he really didn't have a lot of faith in his bullpen. Two thoughts: your impressions of the performance. And is there some substance to the fact that, hey, man, Marion's not there, and I don't have the faith I have in everybody else, which is understandable.
Oh, yeah, I think there's substance to both of those. First of all, I mean, I think with relief pitchers, I don't have faith in almost any relief pitchers other than a guy like Mariano Rivera. If you look at most relief pitchers, they have one or two good years, you know, at most. And then they fade out, you know, or they have one or two good months, you know, or they're good at being left-handed, you know, or something, you know. And a guy like Mariano Rivera is, like, one of the rare, rare exceptions ever that's put together, well, a couple of good decades. Most guys don't even put together 3 or 4 years, you know. So I think that's one thing. And then I think, I think it's absolutely amazing how Andy Pettit, you know, can come and pitch like this with all this time off. I think it just shows what a true professional he is. And I'm not good at, you know, analyzing pitchers and different pitches or anything like that. But, you know, just a pitch like that, you know, against a team like the Reds, you know, that has some pretty good hitters on it. Yeah, it shows pretty good for the Yankees and Pettit moving forward.
You say something because I was in the dressing room in Dusty's office after the game, and he came out and he said, you know, I haven't seen anybody that made Votto look bad like that. I mean, you know, it's
Votto got even.
The thing too, Nate B. Baseball, This thing with David Wright, the manager didn't let him go out there because he didn't want him to get thrown out. I've never understood that whole mindset. Wright's upset that the manager didn't let him go in, but Tim Smith, our buddy Tim Smith, wrote an article. He said they were both right. Wright to be upset to not be allowed to play, but the manager to not let his star go out there and get hit. But, you know, how asinine is that? I mean, I've never understood it. If Dusty hits a home run off me, I throw the ball at Harrell. I never understood.
Yeah.
And me and I think I've said this before. Me and Steve Glavin talked about this.
Yeah.
He said he never adhered to that philosophy, too. He said, now, if I strike the bat out, was it batter out? Does he throw the bat at me? I mean, these guys get a hit three out of every 10 times up. So the success rate is not all that fantastic. But I thought that's kind of crazy. And we talked about this before, Nate. You know, Pujols, 32 years old. You know, he's not the youngest of guys. He may not be peaking. And the Pujols that we're going to see now are the one we used to see, we may never see again. I mean, he's in a league where there's no fastballs. The guys are known to throw the curve. Well, not so. But, you know, your take on why is Albert Pujols not Albert Pujols?
Yeah, there's two things. One, with the pitchers throwing at people, you know, this sort of, you know, everyone's got their different idea of like what the, you know, what the rule is or what the code is. I guess the code, you know, is this. But I think this is something Major League Baseball, I don't know how, but they should take care of it because we're in a changing culture of sports, you know, and things. If you look at football and Bounty Gate, you know, and all this stuff, you know, what was acceptable 10, 15 years ago is not going to be, you know, is not no longer acceptable, not just within the culture, but also within lawsuits, you know, and stuff like that. And as crazy as it sounds, you know, they better take care of this pitchers throwing at people stuff, because if somebody gets, you know, really hurt, you know, there may be a whole other can of, you know, worms that open up, because again, 10, 15 years ago, people might not have thought there'd be all these lawsuits against the NFL, you know, for concussions and whatnot. But the NFL is trying to be proactive about it, and I think baseball is proactive about almost nothing. And and I don't hear many people talking about it, but again, I didn't hear many people, you know, baseball, you know, turned their eye to steroids and it came up and bit them, you know, or whatever. I mean, by baseball, I mean the commissioner and the owners, you know. But anyway, I think they got to take care of this in some way, you know, about this.
When you talk about throwing at a ball player, Hamill the other day purposely threw at Barker, that rookie, 19-year-old rookie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a welcome to the big leagues. Let me tell you something. I'm Barker.
Yeah.
I go to Hamill, and Hamill will never pitch again.
Yeah.
That's the way I deal.
Dusty, this is a children's show, Dusty, please. This is a children's show.
Children's
show, Dusty.
But that dude is going to grow up because he's not going to have it. But what I'm telling you, no, this is the truth.
No, you're right.
Sports itself has enough natural injuries without a ball player
inflicted
or the bounties to injure and then to injure him purposely, even when a pitcher is on the money and he throws a fast curveball or it's wet and it's cold, the ball slips and it gets and accidentally he hits the ball player. Okay, that's an accident. But when you purposely,
forget the purposely.
Design,
everybody knows you're going to do it. I mean, this is one thing about Koufax.
Well,
said
that's, well,
he
that's
had
exactly
none of that.
What I'm saying.
Koufax had none of
that,
man. That
should
that,
not
I mean,
be.
You're crazy. You're right. You
that
right.
Should not be.
Yeah, there's no
and
place
for
in the
him
game.
To sit there and admit, you know, he
only
well,
hold
got
on, back
five
up, back
days
up, back up. Hold on. You just said there's no place in the game, Nate B.
That's
but
right.
Unfortunately, what Dusty
there
is saying,
is no
that
place
is
in
part
the
of the game.
For that.
I mean,
you
know, it's
no,
in the
it's
book.
Not part
I don't
of
understand
game.
Who wrote
no.
these books. That's in the book. Dusty hits a home run. I'm throwing at Harrell. That's the book of baseball. The book of baseball
well, somebody,
is I'm up 10-2. I don't steal any bases.
I'll debate this all the way to the federal court. Somebody from the very beginning, you hit a home run off me,
no,
now
I'm
going to get even with your teammate.
Yeah, I'm just talking about these rules of baseball. I don't understand them. Dutch hits a home run. I throw it Harrell. I'm up 10-2, and I'm mad because Rooney stole second and Dusty steals third. And then what happens? I win the game 11-10. You don't have enough runs to automatically win a baseball game. And
exactly.
The idea is if you're a pro, throw me out. If you're a pro, strike me out. What, you gave me a single? I'm going to give Dusty a single, but Dusty, don't steal second base. Harrell,
Throw your pitcher one hit. Don't hit it out the ballpark. What's this? I mean, it's these crazy rules. These white rules. I don't understand them. Yeah, gentlemen, let's take a quick little break, and then we'll be right back. And then you guys want to digest Nate B. Baseball, then we're going to jump on Harold and Dusty and talk about don't go to play Sea Wings too. How Andre Berto, it's like somebody get tested and prove positive every week. It's getting to the point now, you can't. I mean, Andre Berto gets tested positive. We had Peterson get tested positive before. There's a boxer always somehow in the headlines for something that has nothing to do with boxing. I mean, we're talking about Pacquiao last week, his stand on gay marriage, and now we've got Andre Berto for the second time against. I mean, what the heck? You know what? Let's just make Harold. Is this a good match? Victor Ortiz against Andre Berto? Victor Ortiz against Khan. Peterson's out the pitcher. Berto's out the pitcher. Can we do Khan and Victor Ortiz, Harold?
Yeah, it's a good fight, I think, because Khan can't punch, and that's what, Victor's okay long as the guy can't punch. It's a good little decent fight, Victor was. I think Victor's bigger than Khan. I mean, he's a little bigger than him, but I think that he's going to put up a game fight with him. But, one thing I hate about Khan, he's going to run all over the darn ring. So Victor's definitely got to take him down, but it's a decent fight. Ain't nobody going to get hurt. I can tell you that. Nobody's going to get hurt.
We're back in a minute, baby. A fighter, nobody gets hurt. I remember my daughter, Demi, one time. She was talking to her sister, Chastity, and Chastity said she had a little two-minute fight on the stairway in school. And Demi said, a fight? Demi said, if you ain't put no Vaseline on and a do-rag, that ain't no fight. We'll be back in a minute again. Dr. Stanley, Sports Enough on the Blake Radio Network. Doc Stanley, Sports Enough on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Enough for the show. We're here every Sunday night from 9 to 11 p.m. As you know, ensuing shows, as you heard, Bedtime Stories, before this, Spice and Sugar, and every weekly, the CEO of Blake Radio, Neil Brake, as a special artist. We'll have those shows coming in ensuing week, and also Deirdre Shula, First Lady of Blake Radio, and also tonight, out on assignment, is our First Lady of Sports, Lady A. She's not with us tonight, but she'll be back next week. And now we'll go back into the bullpen with Nate B. Baseball. And then we'll be talking about the sweet science for a while. Also, some more football. I want to ask you, C-Wings, real quickly. Now, what is your take on Filmer getting the same amount of discipline administered to him as the coach? I mean, I'm feeling some racial overtones here. I'm feeling, unfairness. How does he get the same amount of time as the coach who was responsible for everybody? Can you help me here, C-Wings?
I mean, that call right there is definitely up for question. I mean, it was, I think, common knowledge that Vilma was going to get receive some sort of discipline, but not to that aspect. That's hard to call. I can't reach into the commissioner's train of thought or which way he was coming from. I mean, it definitely seems extremely harsh on the player. I expected maybe 5 games top, but for the whole season like that, it seems to be extremely harsh on the players. I mean, they're just following basically the orders of the coach.
Isn't Vilma suing the commissioner?
He's suing for slander. I just don't see that.
Yeah,
I don't see that going anywhere. I mean, you need a couple of elements.
But the thing I'm saying here is, and Mel Cosell, I want you to drag it as quick. I know you're chopped gun. Quit sitting back like you ain't thinking. I mean, how does Vilma get the same amount of time as the coach who implemented this, who allowed this, who monitored this, and, who happens to be white, and we've got this black football player
who happens to be the baddest guy of the bad guys. I'm listening, Rooney.
I agree with you to a certain extent, Don. However, I know I feel that the commissioner had his mind made up that he was just going to extend severe, and I mean severe, penalties to everybody involved. I think he's going to try to make an example out of folks over this
thing. How does Vilma get the same amount as the coach? I don't understand
well,
it.
Doc,
how does Vilma?
Well, Doc,
go on.
Well, Doc, I'm thinking that I had heard, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it had to do with that whole $10,000 bounty purse thing.
Okay,
that
yeah,
supposedly...
but where did he get the money from? Who gave him the $10,000? I mean, it wasn't his own money. I could buy this if it was his own money. It wasn't his own money. It was team money.
It was a coach, though.
Huh?
Wasn't it a coach?
He got the money from the coach every week.
But
and
I think
he has a $7 million a year contract, this coach, Sean Casey.
I think it was coming from the one that's offering
the money.
What's that thing?
Association. It's the same as if someone wants to kill somebody and they give you their gun to someone else, you're just as guilty as the person that supplied the gun to you.
You know, is that now? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I as a lawyer, I can't. I mean, who's to say that if he didn't do it, there'd been repercussions against him, administered against him for not doing it, or like you're not one of the fellas. I can't buy that you're going to give the guy that handed me the gun the same amount of time as the guy. I mean, I'm not going to get as much. I gave, and he shot the guy five times, and I got to spend the same amount of time with him. He shot the gun. He didn't have to take the gun from me.
But, Doc, doesn't that go under the banner of conspiracy?
During and after the fact, man.
Huh?
Doesn't that go under the banner of conspiracy, Doc?
Yeah. Accessory before, during, and after the fact, man.
You know what? Hold on. I'm going to solve this. We're going back to baseball. I'm going to solve this.
Oh.
You ain't seen it. We're going back to baseball.
Wait, but I've got a question about...
It better not be about football.
Well, okay, it is. I can hold on to it.
The answer is Jason Pierre-Paul. Thank you.
Yeah.
But
I think
Sean Payton should have been suspended indefinitely. I think. He should have got the same wins. He should have been suspended indefinitely.
Well, why are the Saints fined $7 million? The Saints just get $7 million of profit? Or what happens to that $7 million that was going to go to Sean Payton? The Saints owner just is going to profit more this year because he doesn't have to pay $7 million to a head coach, right?
$7.5 million.
Yeah, where's that money going? Just in the owner's pocket? Tom Benson?
The owner's pocket is his money.
T-Wing?
Well, he did purchase the Hornets, so maybe he's using it to go into the NBA now.
That's true. That's probably where it's going. But it seems wrong, right? I mean, they're going to actually profit off of this in some way. The Saints owner is.
All the way around. That's $7 million he doesn't have to pay the coach.
Yeah.
You're not paying Vilma. And somewhere along this line, I don't know if you hold all the only response. But Doc Stanley, Sports Up with the Blake with the Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Up for the show, www.blakeradio.com for the donation. DocStanleySports.com is the site. My trusted guard, Sports In Depth, Artifacts Entertainment Hall of Fame, and we're talking about football plays. You know, the other day went to the United Way dinner, got a chance to talk to Justin Kilmer. Joe Namath was there, and we always talk about his good buddy Linwood, and was able to get a nice autograph ball to join. You know, one of the things with the Smithsonian and their visit here, and what they're looking to open up, the Afro-American wing of the Smithsonian. And one of the things that we think, is a really big asset to that is we have a lot of stuff, and they were really taken back by it too. I mean, Paul happened to see one of my autograph programs from Eddie Robinson and Grambling, and it was actually made like a menu. It's very unique. It's made like a menu, and you open it, and there's all the pictures of the plays, and then all the status and. And that's one of the things we have here, of the many things, of the Trust in God, Sports In Depth, Entertainment, Artifacts Museum. And I always want to get that plug in there. And, Nate, we're going to end up with boxing. Nate, people are taken back by how well Derek Jeter is playing, and it seems, and it seems that a lot of the rift. Now, if I notice it on the field, it seems like him and A-Rod are kind of uniting back together. I remember when they first came up on the cover of Sports Illustrated, which we also have that autograph, Sports Illustrated cover of A-Rod, then with Seattle, and Derek Jeter, then always with the Yankees, autographed it. That's part of the African-American artifacts. So I've probably seen that to the Smithsonian. But it seems that they have kind of gotten back together as the friends they were. I've noticed it on the field. They're warming up together. They're standing next to each other. Your take, any words have you heard? Or have they, are they kind of rebonding again? And, Jeter, tremendous. Right now, he has the most hits in the major leagues.
Yeah, I heard that Jeter just, I'm not going to, breaking down a swing or anything like that myself, but from what I've heard, Jeter had been fiddling around with his technique and swing the last couple of years, and he decided to just sort of, from my understanding, just sort of ditch that and go back to what he knows best, which seems to be working, for him. And I don't have any inside thing on A-Rod and Derek Jeter, but it would make sense to me that at this point, maybe A-Rod's figured out, regained or, respect for Jeter and figure out how Jeter does things, because A-Rod's going to need to rebound, himself if he doesn't want to become just basically a firestorm from, the media with this contract for the next 5 years, he's not, his average isn't terrible, but obviously, five home runs or whatever he has,
The power numbers are out there. The power numbers are out there.
And so he must respect. I mean, I'm hoping, that A-Rod's matured, in the sense of he respects Derek Jeter even more, with how Jeter's handled things. Because Jeter's getting credit, the last couple of years with defense, sabermetrics, not getting as many ground balls or whatever. But Jeter seemed to weather the storm. And A-Rod's going to have to, is my guess. So maybe that's it. I don't know. Maybe A-Rod is getting more,
maturity. Playing together is also a thing. And as Dr. King always said, forgiveness is not an occasional act, but a permanent state of mind. Harold, can we forgive consistently what's happening every week? There's the Peterson with the growth hormones. Then we've got this case this week, Andre Berto. He tested positive for steroids. Is this dumb and dumber?
Well, the problem is that you've got guys that are not equipped to be trainers out there training these guys, and they thinking this is the best way to give their fighter an edge by putting these so-called junk in their body, which ain't going to help them at all. I mean, you can't fight. You can't fight, like I told you last week. You got guys that are not equipped to really be trainers, but they're trying to use every method that they can in their favor to try to win a fight. And that's the reason why boxing is going to the drain, because you got immature people that don't have that equipped. But I think the fighters are stupid. Well, they're not, because see, they're getting their knowledge from these guys. They're supposed to be. They'll tell them that I've been in
dumb and dumber. Dumb and dumber.
Yeah, right. They say I've been in the game for 25 years, and like I told y'all long time ago, the people that know boxing the last 25 years don't know nothing. Simple as that. You've been taught by uneducated teachers. Simple as that. All right. So you don't know nothing. So naturally, they're just doing whatever they can do to get an edge. And so basically, you're gonna get all these problems that what you're having. As I look in every gym, and I'm amazed by it, everybody's got something new to teach somebody that's adding to boxing. You got guys picking up paper clips off the floor so they can learn how to bend down and duck. You got a guy crawling so he can strengthen his arms and legs while he's crawling. I mean, they got all these crazy things that's going on.
And Harold, you said paper clips to do what now?
Yeah, paper clips. He's been down through paper clips, and that makes him teach him how to duck a punch. You know that's how. I'm just being facetious. I mean, you know, the thing is that.
No, but he's right. Harold is absolutely right. New techniques, because you got a trainer, and then you have a personal trainer. And
right.
that personal trainer comes in with a psychological book of different methods to make the fighter a better fighter above the trainer. And that's what makes the fighter, you know. And he was not being funny when he said to bend down and pick up paper plates. That's not paper plates. Paper clips. So that the dude will learn. I mean, that's what happens. But you see, to piggyback on Harold, I think Peterson may have been stupid, one, but I have to give, don't rush to judgment, Alberto, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Reminds me of what happened with James Lysow Tony when he tore
Good point, Jesse.
Okay. And now, Berto had a slight tear on his bicep, and I thought, wow, they're going to operate. No, they didn't need operation. They just taped it to his chest, kept it immobile because that little tear eventually will unite with the main connection, whatever the heck
it'll mend back.
Right. But as you are going through this mending process, remember, there is medication that these guys got to take, painkillers these guys got to take to alleviate the pain and the discomfort. You know, if as much medication as I take today, and I took one of them tests, man, do not pass go. Go straight to Rikers Island, man, because I got so much junk in my body.
What happened back in the day when we tore a muscle in our arms and stuff and took an aspirin the next night and came out there for 10 rounds? I mean, what happened to those guys?
Exactly.
Have the human people changed or something?
No.
I mean, the human body must have changed or something. I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. This is a new school. You got to understand. They got computers and all that. I don't know how to run a computer, but the fact is that I'm just trying to learn what these new people are doing
often
today. They
remain the same.
The guys,
new does not mean improved, and you can see it across the board in sports. These guys got weights. They got diets. They got the newest shoes. They got the best equipment, and they're one-third as good. Huh?
And let me say this, Doc, just quickly. Anybody who plays pro football, pro wrestling, boxers, anything like that, okay, guys work in pain. I'll take that, even though this is sports entertainment, but the blows are very, very real, and so are the back aches and injuries and necks and what have you, okay?
Blows
wrestlers
are very
have work
real.
In pain every day, okay? There's a difference between being hurt and being injured, okay? Being wrestlers work hurt every day, okay? Injured is when they say you got a broken this, broken that, go on home, you can't work, okay? But hurt is something that they learn to live with, much like pro football players on a weekly basis. They, you know, play hurt. And it depends on your threshold of pain to be able to go out there and perform.
Right, exactly, because...
I was trying to put a fight together today, right? And it was a heavyweight fight. And the guy, and the man, I ain't going to mention the name, but I asked the guy, I said, your fighter ready? He said, well, Harold, we have a little problem. I said, what's the problem? He said, my fighter can't lose weight. Now, he's a heavyweight, right? I said, well, what's the problem? I mean, he said, I don't know. I got to take him to a doctor to tell us why he can't lose weight. I said, well, boxing is one of the greatest sports of all to make you lose weight. If you eat right and train right and everything, you should be able to. I said, your fighter's already weighing 250. I mean, he's 6. You know, he's 6'6". He's weighing 250. He said, yeah, but he's 280 now. We just can't lose that other 30 pounds. I said, well, he got to be eating. Ain't no other way he's got to be gaining his weight. But my point is, here now the guy's going to take the fighter that he can't lose weight to a doctor to show them how to lose weight.
Oh, my Lord.
Now, you
want to
tell me there ain't no problem in this game?
Oh, my Lord. All the dude has to put on a sweatsuit and run.
Maybe miss one of the 5 meals a day he's taking.
Yeah. That's what I said. Yeah. But what it is,
McDonald's.
He's living a great life. Where he, you know, he does, all he does is train and getting a paycheck every week, and he's 11-0. So, but the fact is that he's eating himself to death because of that.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way he's living right now.
That's
yeah,
so
it reminds me of that great line that you, Tim Smith, Doc Stanley, Sports Dev on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports Dev on the show. We're going to give you a birthday review in a minute as we go through the month. And the great line that Tim Smith said, you had to question the conviction and seriousness of Riddick Bowe when Riddick Bowe wanted to have a kitchen, okay, a kitchen built in the bedroom. Built in the bedroom, Harold.
Yeah.
It's a bedroom, and the kitchen's a bedroom.
That ain't bad as our man Buster Douglas, you know what I mean? Buster, when he made that money with Holyfield, he had retired right then that night. Because he built him a kitchen, a dining room, a kitchen and a restaurant in his house. How big he got. He got so big, he almost died from being so big.
Yeah, he had a heart condition. But getting back to this, this is why Harold's totally right. But I wonder whether the high-tech medication that are given to these guys to cure and relieve the pain may have caused the testing positive. I have no excuse for Lamont Peterson. He said that he was tired and he was exhausted, so he had to take some testosterone pills to enhance him. But, you know,
physically or for boxing?
Because he was getting tired and he was exhausted. He was fatigued. So he had to take something.
That you're in boxing, you're going to get tired. That's the way you're supposed to train.
Exactly. You're going to get tired and you work up. You know, you work up the stamina to not to get tired.
Dusty, we're right back to what you're saying. He's talking about a problem of getting fatigued. But if you're doing what you're supposed to do, you're supposed to get fatigued. So once again, we're talking about people in leadership roles who don't have a clue. I'm going to recite a line by one of my dearest friends, sad and touching. It's crazy. Sad and touching. I mean, you know, it's what you keep saying every week, Dusty. It's what Harold keeps saying when it comes about the. And I'll never forget coming from Gleason's gym, and I'm in the office. You probably thought it's my office. I stayed here so much. And John kind of comes in and says, "I just left the gym," he said, "and there's a guy throwing a jab up in the air, straight up. You know, like, who jabs straight up?" Harold comes about 50 minutes later, sits at his desk. He shakes his head. Harold said, "Man, it's sad and touching. You ought to see these trainers out there now." I mean, you know, Harold said, guys have got diamonds and have no idea what they have. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Show, the channel, Sports Network for the show. C-Wings, want to go to you for a minute. Now, what's happening with the NBA? It seems like Thunder is raining pretty heavy on the Lakers right now.
Cold boy.
Well, I think the Lakers are done. It's just a matter of the Lakers are done. I mean, when they got rid of Odom, they lost a big piece of the puzzle. Then they got rid of Derek Fisher. Even though he's up in age, he still was playing well. I think that was one of the big reasons that Phil Jackson left the team when the owner turned over the operations to his son. Look at the moves he's been making.
You're right. You're right. Speaking of the Sun, the big lunar eclipse. Now, Stevens, also, it seems that somebody didn't tell the Spurs that they weren't supposed to beat the Heat. Am I right?
I think they can't read something either.
What's the story?
I definitely think it's going to be San Antonio, and the way that the Heat has been playing. I mean, this is definitely a winnable series for them. But, I mean, they're hurt and stuff like that. But it's definitely going to be San Antonio in the West. The Heat is the East is still up. I can't call the East.
What about the Thunder? The Thunder have a chance or not?
Well, they have a chance to play San Antonio. I just don't think they're going to beat them.
Boy, these guys are ready for politics. Doc Stanley, Sports Dev on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Dev for the show. We're going to do a few minutes, mic on, lights off. Live your life today. Never stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for the service to others is when you prepare for your space on Earth. That was Ali. The first one before that was Dr. King, and the one that Larry White liked so much. I simply say from the bottom of my heart, God bless you all. Trust in God. Hang on a minute. We'll give you a little mic on, lights off. Larry Hardesty, you got something to say?
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
And it's Mike on, lights off, and Larry Hardesty.
I gotta go soon, Doc.
Bring that in. You're heading back to the studio? Okay.
Yeah, I got
hang on just a minute. We need some predictions.
Yeah.
In fact, let's just do it real quick.
Yes, you will win the Academy Award. Okay, next.
You know, Dusty, I think there's a place for you in this business, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Place for you in this business. I like your style. I'm actually probably, Consuela probably told you that on the Ouija board, but we're going to let that go. But real quickly now, Dusty, before you go back to the studio, what are we going to do? The Berto fight is now gone. The Peterson fight is now gone.
Unfortunately.
Is the possibility of Khan and Ortiz, and how can we sell, we're talking about Malignaggi and Zab Judah, but
that's
where are you going to put that fight? Nobody knows him in Vegas, and you know, I'm thinking, Harold, is this a fight for the Paramount? They're both Brooklyn guys.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a fight for New York. You can't put it nowhere else. I mean, you know,
exactly.
It's a New York fight all the way, and that's the only place you can put it is at the Paramount. I mean, you can't, what do they call the Garden? That's what they call it now?
Yeah, they do, the Paramount. Yeah.
The Paramount now? Okay.
Yeah. Well, but they're both Brooklyn boys. Isn't the Nets Stadium already ready to go?
No,
It's 2013.
Yeah,
it's not ready. 2013.
Okay, I'm sorry. How big is that Aviator?
Aviator where?
That place that they've been doing the fights, the Aviator. Remember they had that card there? I'm thinking that may be the perfect place for that fight. But I don't know if Golden Boy, it'd be a good move by Golden Boy to do that because they're going to be doing some stuff at the new Nets place. So I'm thinking.
Well, Golden Boy ain't going to do nothing until they go to especially New York.
Then if they don't do the Paramount, that I can't see it going to Vegas, Dusty. How I can't. I mean, who's
going to
come
go
see those guys?
They ain't that kind of people. I mean, they're not no high.
Yeah.
High rollers ain't going to follow
exactly.
them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, high rollers
it's
in their mind.
It's a New York fight.
Yeah, it's a New York fight.
It is a New York fight, but then there's also Staples Center in California. Is it Staples Center or something?
No,
I don't know.
For what?
They can't do it.
They don't come from there. Nobody knows them.
Yeah,
exactly.
Unknowns. You know what? This fight is a great undercard fight on a pay per view card. You know, it's a good card. Real quickly, Nate B. Baseball, the big week by the former home run man, a man down in Texas. He looked like he may hit about 50 home runs. Can he keep it up, or what's your thoughts?
Yeah, he can. You know, I think he can keep it up. It's a matter of, I think the biggest thing for him is one, health. I mean, he is injury prone. You know, one, and two, his personality. Not personality, but his off the field issues. You know, mm-hmm. You know, who knows what's going on there? And he has had some relapses and stuff. And you know, I we've talked on the show, you know, about race things and how it's covered in the media. And I think one of the big differences between black and white is if you're like a black guy and you're a white guy and, you know, your image is good, your image is clean, you know, maybe there's not a lot of problem. There's not much different. But I think maybe the white guy that makes more mistakes or, you know, has some lapses of judgment, gets more breaks than the black guy, you know, that may do that. I mean, I don't, you know, whether it's Daryl Strawberry or whomever. So I think you see that with Josh Hamilton. You know, I think maybe people might look at him, you know, differently. So I think it's, you know, the character with flaws that where the white guy gets more breaks, because he certainly had his, you know,
shortcomings.
Yeah, issues over the years. Yeah. And but also with that aside, you know, he's had, you know, so I mean, he's got the talent. It's just a matter of him staying on the field and, you know, staying focused and healthy, you know, because even last year he hurt his shoulder last year on this play that was a pop up to the catcher, you know, and no one was covering home plate and the third base coach sent him and he ended up injuring his shoulder. And then after the play, man, he really blamed his third base coach, which I thought,
really?
Which I thought was really not great, because I was just like, man, it was a freak play. Take some responsibility, you know, because you're the guy that, it's not the coach's fault, you know what I mean? And some bad things just happen. And, you know, I really didn't like that he blamed the third base coach for sending him on a dangerous play, because who knows what would have, and he didn't have to go. I mean,
yeah, that's the bottom line.
Run. Star players or any players do what they want to do anyway, you know, a lot of the time. So, but anyway, his character is not.
Speaking,
Doc, if I could just chime in for a quick second. You know, you hope a guy like that actually kind of gets his act together, because he's just loaded with talent.
So
you look at a guy and you see that, you know, it's possibility that he would waste it. He'd be like, man, what a waste. The guy's loaded with talent.
Yeah.
You know, in basketball, Doc, where I always thought that way of, just quickly speaking, of, and I'm like, this guy had Hall of Fame written all over him, but he couldn't overcome his demons. Michael Ray Richardson.
Mm.
I thought the guy had just loads of talent, just so couldn't overcome his demons.
I thought he was a hell of a player. I didn't see him in the class with Earl and Clyde and Wes and Oscar. But I tell you who would have went down as one of the greatest four, and he's still one of the greatest fours ever played this game. But he really could have possibly been right after Elgin Baylor had it all stayed, was Derek Coleman. I mean, Derek Coleman had it all. I mean, he could rebound with the greatest forwards. He could shoot inside and outside. You talk about, okay, Bird. I mean, Derek Coleman was a better ball handler than Larry Bird. I mean, you know, Derek Coleman had a better outside shot than Julius Erving. But Derek Coleman could handle the ball better than McAdoo played the forward, but James Worthy. I mean, this guy, if he didn't get hurt, I mean, he had it all. Dusty, real quick, I know you got to run into the studio. But what's your show? I need a quick move. So what's going to happen? The circumstances not allow Malignaggi and Zab to happen, because where can it happen? If it has to happen in Paramount, I mean, it has to be in that little room downstairs, else, as Harold says, it don't happen. Yes or no?
Well, you know, first of all, you have to understand the logistics of the promoter. That's Las Vegas. That's Oscar De La Hoya, because both now live in Vegas, Zab Judah and Malignaggi, even though they come back to the burg, to the hood and visit the people.
But it's a Brooklyn fight, though. It's a Brooklyn fight.
Huh?
Right? It's a Brooklyn fight, though. I mean, my thing is, we just concluded it's not going to happen in Vegas. If it doesn't happen, I mean, it has to happen in here.
You know, but the thing is, Doc, you're not Golden Boy. You don't know if it's going to happen in Vegas. It's a done deal.
It can't happen. Harold, it can't happen. Who's coming to see that fight, Dusty?
I'm with Dust on this. Golden Boy might do anything. You know, they're not the brightest promoters in the world, okay?
Yeah.
So they might do
another brightest knife in the drawer.
What's
the
next thing? Two fighters against me. I should have known better. Hit the towel.
But the fact of the matter is, you gotta be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
They're not logical.
Right. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. They're going to promote. You know, Golden Boy has its own cable, and they promote in certain areas. Bob Arum, Top Rank, has its own cable, and they promote mostly in Mexico. You should see those stadiums, how filled they are.
Wow.
So, I mean, and then the super Latino junior bantamweight. Man, I pan the audience, man, the place is jammed. And this is a world title. So they have their ways of making money. Plus the fact, you got to understand that Paulie has a world-known title now, and Zab Judah is going to fight him for it. So they're going to find some venue and promoted as a world title shot. And you're right, Doc. It belongs on the underneath of a pay-per-view or main event. That's where it should go. But knowing Golden Boy, and you know, and he's maybe 5 percentages above top rank, they're going to blow it out of proportion and make it a big deal, you know. So that's basically what I see. But where, I mean, they're both Brooklyn boys. It would be great to go home, but hey, they no longer live here.
Yeah, you because see? They got to spend too much money if they brought to New York. Yeah, if they
exactly.
did in Vegas, they don't have to spend no money. They got the room
Absolutely.
Free, the food free. They get
I stand corrected, gang.
Food.
I could, so I could,
yeah.
it's Vegas. Wow!
Right, and
wow.
And the thing is, you said you asked me the other, I mean, the other day, just a few minutes ago, would Khan and who's going? They're
Ortiz.
Looking for a replacement for Khan at the last minute. It's going to be a tough go. They're looking for a replacement for Ortiz at the last minute. It's going to be a tough go.
Hey,
see,
Dusty, what's wrong with you and Harold? You take one, Harold, take the other.
Hey, Harold, come on, let's get back into the gym, man.
You know, I'm going to do you a favor, Doug. I'll take both of them for you. You can take
I'll tell you what, Harold.
I'll take one in the afternoon and the other one that evening.
Okay,
like
I'll work the corner with you. I'll keep you fresh, and I'll give you instructions, but you got to give me my percentage, man.
You know what? I'm the promoter.
This money's so easy to take. I'll give you a bonus on this one.
Oh, my God. Hey, Nate Lee Baseball, you the PR man.
Uh-huh.
I'm the promoter. Doing you the co-promoter. And Mel Cosell, you handle security, baby. Hey, we all must make a little something out of this.
No, security.
I took enough falls on the mat, my dad. I'll tell you what, I'll take the easier job. I'll be the timekeeper at the Bell. How about that?
Boy,
that
time king say, only in America. See, Wayne, get me real quick. So, the Lakers are gone. The Heat is gone. My question is, when is Sanchez going to be gone? C-Wing's back in studio. All right, gang, well, then what we're going to do, we're going to, once again, Blake Radio, donation, www.blakeradio.com, Rainbow Soul. StockStanleySports.com for the Trust in God Sports in Depth Entertainment Museum, and StockStanley@AOL.com for any sort of correspondence you want to get with me. As always, we just want to thank you for being with us here, and you just can't get any better than the crew that we have. We, from the bottom of my heart, we always say, I say, the three thoughts. Dr. King, life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Muhammad Ali, service to others is to make you pay for your space on earth. And the one that Larry Harris he loved so much, live your life today as you have to stand before God tomorrow. I say, from the bottom of my heart, God bless you all and trust in God. Larry Harris, he is going to say good night for us, and then both Dusty and Mel Cosell will say sayonara officially. Mr. Harris, the greatest African sportscaster in the history of New York City radio, which makes him the greatest of all time.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
And then our tag team close out. Dusty says sayonara, and then Mel Cosell says goodbye. Dusty, tell him goodbye.
God bless. And Harold, you and I are going to Gleason tomorrow. I get the pads, man. You got ready. We get ready. We're going to make some money out of these.
Oh, yeah.
But God bless everybody.
Yeah, this is
life.
Oh, you heard it here fast.
I ain't had it that easy in my whole career, so you know I'm all right with this.
Once again, birthday
God
wishes
bless.
To Master St. Clair.
I just want to say this. I mean, I'm playing two guys that's not no punches. Jesus Christ,
yeah.
I ain't never had that before.
Don King says, only in America.
Yeah.
Only in America. Mel Cosell, tell everybody good night.
We thank the incredibly large and vast Sports in Depth Nation for again enjoying our panel discussion. Glad to have you with us, and tune in again.
With that said, the panel tonight, Nate B. Baseball, our Mario Rivera, the one and only, the Campo Dias, Dino B. as A.B. Lois, the legend that lives.
Harold Weston Jr., taking it right to the cuff with no bluff, Mel Cosell Jr. The birthday, once again, to Master Richard St. Clair, and also at the week on the 18th, that of none other than Reginald Martinez Jackson. And we also want to say happy birthday on Monday to Lou DiBella, and not Monday, the 17th, and the whole calendar to Lou DiBella and Ray Charles Leonard. Doc Stanley, DocStanleySports.com, DocStanleyAOL.com, WWBlakeRadio, RainbowSoul.com. From the bottom of my heart, God bless you all and trust in God. We shout out to everybody over there in Brazil, Aiden and Rosie. And we thank you once again for being on Sports in Depth. Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports in Depth of the show, Harold Weston Jr., Justino Baby Lewis, Nate B. Baseball, Mel Cosell Smith, and C-Wings. Cedric Raymond, Lady A was on assignment. She'll be back with us next week. We'll see you then. God bless you all. Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network.
Good luck.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Walks to the